accession number 22230, reel 2.
Excuse me, Ken. Yeah. Kenneth Sparks, reel 2.
Yes.
You were saying about the, how the waves were high at first.
Oh, yes, initially. But the next morning, you would have thought it was a summer's day. It was lovely and smooth. The sun was shining. You wouldn't have thought any, other than the fact that there was a great big expanse of ocean with nothing on it, you wouldn't have realised what had happened even. It was such a gorgeous day. But that's how things were sometimes. The weather, being the Atlantic, did alternate from sometimes very nice to sometimes really rough. And of course there was the disappointment of the merchantman pulling away. And the excitement of the whales, oh dear, yeah, it was really, until they suddenly realised, well, if they caught us with those flukes, we wouldn't be here much longer. But Mary Cornish, she read to us. I mean, after all, we were not having a lot to eat, we were very lethargic. We weren't all that fit to do too much. Towards the end, I think we were very poorly. I don't know whether we would have lasted much longer, because what we didn't know is, of course, that the last day there wasn't any more food anyway. But we, as I say, I think she kept our spirits up. She rubbed our legs because they were permanently in the water of the bottom of the boat, you know. And I know Paul suffered badly with trench foot, and in the end, when I eventually got home and I'd been home a little while, I got sent off to Winchester General Hospital because I'd got trench foot, and that was the one hospital that treated it in Britain at the time. Yeah.
Could you describe what trench foot is?
It's caused by the fact that your feet are permanently in salt water, and they shrink and shrivel, and after a while you can't walk on them. They've just given way. There's nothing left to walk on. Mm. But I was more lucky perhaps than Paul, because he had to be rushed straight off to hospital when we landed, whereas with the rest of us we managed to walk, so I couldn't have been quite as bad. But I think that's Mary Cornish to thank for that, for the work that she did on our legs and feet every day, rubbing them to get the circulation, keep the circulation running.
Because there were six of you, you said.
Six children,
yes.
Yeah.
Who were the others? There was Paul Shearing.
Oh dear. Oh, I've got all their names written down out there.
Anyone that you particularly remember?
Well, we were just huddled together. There was the two from up north. There was Bill Short from up north. Of course, we couldn't understand him because he came from up north, didn't he? And most of us came from the London and outskirts area. Then there was, let me have a thought. You know, I can't even think of their names, and I write to them every year.
Don't worry, because this can be.
I can dig it out in a minute.
Just if there was anyone you know outstanding.
Well, no, we
that
were all.
Remember.
No, we were all together. I think, you know, we were all in the same sort of boat.
You were all boys, were you?
Oh, we were all boys. Yeah, Mary Cornish was the only woman on the boat. Yeah.
She sounds, you know, a very remarkable lady.
Oh, she was. Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
What happened with? I was thinking, you know, she's the only woman on the boat with all these men. Did you have a special arrangements for sort of going to the lavatory?
Well, for her, everybody turned away. I mean, for the men, it didn't matter, did it? But for her, turn your backs, and they did. What else could, you know, poor girl, what else could she do? But, of course, after a couple of days, you didn't go to the lavatory. You hadn't had enough to eat or drink. So, for the first couple of days, yes, but after that, there was nothing to pass through anyway. Because trying to eat a ship's biscuit is physically impossible unless you've got water. It's like eating a lump of unleavened solid bread. You've just got to break the tiniest bits off and suck them until you could. And, of course, you hadn't got a lot of saliva to suck them with, but you still ate them. Even the seagulls used to turn their noses up at them. But they kept us alive, yeah.
Did you have any equipment like flares?
Yes, we did have one set of flares, and I think they were let off long before we saw this merchant ship, so I suppose we hadn't got anything left then. Because there had been, I mean, as we were pulling away, we knew that there were other ships in the convoy, and they let the flares off, but nobody saw us, at least as far as we know. Although, I was reading a report not that long ago where somebody on another one of the merchantmen in the convoy thought that he saw us. But of course, they couldn't stop if they had. They wouldn't dare. So, yeah.
How did your spirits keep up?
Well, I think it was Mary Cornish kept us going much as anything. What with, you know, sing songs and such forth and stories. And of course, we were still fair. I mean, initially we were quite fit, and we would help push these poles along that propelled the boat and bailed. But after a couple of days, of course, with next to no food and the very cold Atlantic winds and such forth, we got quite lethargic. And I think she used to slap us to keep us awake in the daytime. I don't know how she managed, I must admit. Yes.
Did you sleep a lot?
You were lethargic. I won't say you slept soundly, but you drowsed. Your eyes drooped a little, and you didn't know what was going on. You just dropped down until it was time for food, and then perhaps there would be a commotion, so you'd open your eyes to see what was going on. Mm. Yeah.
Did you ever have hallucinations?
Not to my knowledge, no. I personally didn't. Whether the others did, I don't know. I know that on that day when the plane saw us, we didn't have hallucinations that day. So we were still reasonably in control of our senses at the time, yeah.
I was wondering about, you know, you said there were so many on this ship, about over 56.
On our little boat, it wasn't that little. I think it could have taken a few more, possibly, but the seamen were together on the thwarts, right across it. I suppose they were in rows of about four or five on it, each thwart across, so that they were fairly close together. But I suppose at a pinch, if they had to, they could have perhaps got a few more on. But whoever was on deck when they were being ready to be lowered had decided that was enough for that boat, and that's that one, let it go, and did so.
It's surprising. These seamen, would they have been the Lascars?
They were the Lascars, yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Was it surprising there were so many of these on the boat, rather than the children?
Not really, because I suppose when you think of it, there were an awful lot. It was a boat that came from India, and I suppose there was an awful lot of crew. And I suppose if you worked it out, I don't really know how many lifeboats it had, but there were only 80 odd children, weren't there? So if you shared them out about amongst the lifeboats, I suppose it wouldn't have been much more than six or seven to a boat. Then, of course, there were those that never got to the deck anyway that had got killed when the torpedo exploded.
Well, were you able to move around the boat, shift your sort of positions with them?
Only in the little bit that we've got. That's why we had right near to us, we had one of these poles that you pulled and pushed to. That's why we used to do it, to give us a little bit of exercise. But we took it in turns, you know. After all, they were all younger than me. I think Freddie Steele, I think, was the youngest, but I'm not really sure. I was actually the oldest of the lot, yeah. You couldn't walk round the boat. There was no room. I mean, you couldn't go out of our little bit in the front where we had this little cockpit that we'd made up with the canvas. That's where we stayed. We couldn't move from it, really. You slept there, you did everything there, you ate there. The only thing that occasionally you could come out for a bit of fresh air, shall we say. Or, as I say, we did a little bit. And then sitting right opposite, was Father O'Sullivan and the Polish chap and Mary Cornish. They sat opposite and we sat underneath because we were children. They were looking after us. I think that's what it was, much as anything. But it was fairly cramped for six of us, yes.
And did morale keep up in the whole boat?
It seemed to. I mean, I don't know about the Indians, because after all, they didn't speak our language on average. They must have been frozen to death, because they come straight from India. All they'd got on was their cotton clothing. They really must have been bitterly cold and soaked. But they still seemed to, I mean, let's say they seemed as well as one could expect in the conditions. Yeah. But the morale kept up. I mean, they, like everybody else, thought that we would be picked up tomorrow or the day after, but we'll keep going till we get there, sort of thing. That was the idea. This is how we were. If we weren't going to be picked up, then we were going to row all the way to Ireland. We didn't care.
Was there one person who took charge of the boat?
Yes, the steward, George Purvis, was in charge of the... He was the officer in charge of the boat. He saw to the rationing. He decided which way we were going to go and everything else. Yeah.
And was this a definite decision that you were aware of, that you were going to head for somewhere?
Well, what we were heading for, I think, initially, of course, were other boats in the convoy, but, of course, they would have scattered anyway. So the next alternative, well, when the next morning came and it dawned and there was nothing in sight, whichever, well, what shall we do? It's too far to Canada, but we might possibly get as far as Ireland if we try, so we tried. That was the thought, I think. That's how they decided. I mean, they didn't ask us. We were children. We did as we were told. But that's what I think was the idea. I mean, as far as the Indians were concerned, they wouldn't have known which country was which anyway. I don't think they'd only ever come from India to England and back forwards. It was the pride of that shipping, the Ellerman shipping line. It was a beautiful boat, I must admit. But yeah.
Did you have any sort of flag?
No, none at all. No flags. We hadn't got anything like that. I think we hoisted a piece of cloth up at the, you know, when we thought people might see us, but that boat never saw us anyway, so that was the end of it. But we had a small sail, which did help to propel us along when we were a bit, especially towards the end, when nobody had got the strength to push these poles. This sail did at least help us move along, I think.
Is that right, that nobody could really do that?
Well, towards the end, they were too weak, yes. After all, 8 days on a very tiniest of rations, and they were tiny. I mean, one ship's biscuit and either one piece of peach and one sip of water per person per day, you do get very tired at the end of it. You're exhausted more from lack of food. Yeah.
Did you ever give up hope?
No. None of us did. I don't think anybody gave up hope. They were, if we weren't going to be picked up one way, we were going to get to Ireland. That was the thought. And I think that's what kept us going as much as anything, especially when the odd day that was very nice and, we're doing a fair speed now, sort of thing. But yeah, no, nobody had the slightest intention of ever giving up hope, no.
When you think back to your own physical condition, what was the worst thing for you? You know, the...
Well, I suppose, I was rather lucky in a way, because I'd still got my overcoat, even though it was sodden wet, but at least it kept some of the cold winds out. But, no...
What were the other boys wearing then?
Well, all wearing their pyjamas. It was night time. Yeah? None of us... Pyjamas and their kapok life jacket, which is one of these thick things that they put round their neck, you know. But that was all we had for warmth. That's why... the first chance they had, they put this piece of canvas over to stop at least the rain getting in, and it also helped to keep some of the cold wind off. But that physically, I suppose we were suffering, but we didn't realise it. Especially I couldn't have been too bad towards the end, because it says in the papers, and I presume they're right, because I did know, I signalled the plane telling them that it was the City of Benares. But I can't say that I definitely remember doing it, but that's what that says, and I suppose somebody did. And as they said, it was right forward that they saw these hand signals. It must have been me, because we were right in the front of the boat.
Yes, could I ask you about this now? Mm-hmm. You know, the sighting the plane.
Oh, dear.
What that day was. Mm.
Well, we sighted it, but we didn't expect it to see us. I must admit that. And when I have seen a picture, I think it was in a Canadian paper, that one of the people on the plane took of us, and we're the minutest little dot in a great big wide expanse of ocean. But of course we waved naturally, and I stood up, so I'm told, and signalled that we were from it, and then eventually they saw it and came down lower. Oh dear, wasn't it lovely? Saved. But of course they tried to land, but it was far too rough. They just couldn't land the boat. So they signalled, I suppose, to George Purvis, who would have understood it perhaps more than I would have done, that they were going to get help, and they found this destroyer and brought that up to us next day.
Wait, when you say you'd signal, did you...
By hand signals, yeah. The old hand signals that one used to do with flags.
Oh,
only
like
I didn't
semaphore.
Have any flags, semaphore without... Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Only I didn't have the flags, it had to be by hand.
But you knew it, did you?
Semaphore? I had been in the army cadets, and learnt things like that, so I did know it, so it's quite possible. But I can't personally remember actually doing it. But there we are.
Was there great excitement when that plane came?
We were looking forward to something decent to eat, but of course we couldn't have it anyway. When we were picked up, the doctor on board wouldn't let us. No, he said, not today, you won't. You can sit and have drinks, but nothing to eat. But we did make up for it the next day. Oh, yes.
So how about the approach of the destroyer? Could you tell me about that and how you were picked up?
We could see this. The aeroplane didn't leave us until the boat actually got to us. But we could see the aeroplane, and then we saw this boat in the far distance, and it was only a little dot, and it came belting up, pulled alongside us. But of course, most of us were too weak to actually climb. It dropped these netting over the side that you were supposed to climb up, but we far too weak. Some of the sailors came down and lifted us up onto the deck so that we... And then we were picked up from there. We were treated like royalty.
Yes, it was a destroyer, you
said. It was a destroyer called HMS Antony. I shall never forget it. Great big grey side with H40 on the side. I mean, we didn't know it was HMS Antony then. We just saw the H40. Oh, dear. Oh, it was lovely. Yes.
Where were you taken?
We were taken... Eventually, we were taken to Goorook.
Oh, yeah. No, I meant on the ship.
Oh,
well... Were you on it for long?
We must have been on it for about 4 days, I suppose, if we were... didn't arrive until the 26th. We were taken, naturally, down to the lower mess decks where it was nice and warm and dry, and we were rubbed down and given fresh clothing. Mind you, it didn't fit, but still, it was warm and it was dry. And then, of course, the doctor saw us and decided that we could drink even though we couldn't eat. And then we were looked after in the different cabins by the crew, and we were looked after.
What did they do for you?
Oh, there was nothing they didn't do for us. They really looked after us. And once we could eat, I've never had sandwiches so thick, sort of a tin of salmon between two slices of bread sort of thing. Oh, dear. Gorgeous. And hot, sweet tea to help us recuperate. But poor Paul, I'm afraid he got taken away to the sick bay. He was really poorly.
Did you sleep a lot at that time?
Well, we did the first day because, after all, it took us a few days really to actually recover our proper strength. I mean, even when we eventually got to Goorook, the sailors wouldn't let us walk. They carried us off the boat down to the awaiting... I don't think they were ambulances. Only Paul went in ambulance. I think that they were... I think it was a coach of some sort. I've got a vague idea that they carried us into, or yeah, I'm sure it was a sort of a coach, which took us away to a hotel to spend the next couple of days to help recuperate and go, oh, we were treated like royalty for those few days that we were up in Gorak, or Glasgow anyway. We were taken into Glasgow. We didn't actually stay in Gorak the night. We stayed in Glasgow.
It must have been a wonderful feeling to have felt safe, was it?
Safe at last, yes. I mean, it didn't matter about bombs falling, we were safe. We weren't going to... We were no longer cold. And I think there's nothing worse than being wet and cold and not being able to get warm.
I suppose being on a destroyer... Weak as you were, that must have been quite an experience.
Again, that was still, yes, oh yes, we were taken everywhere we wanted to go, of course, and nothing was ever too much, and it really was a thrill, you know. Oh, it didn't half go after rowing, yes. Yes, it really did go somewhere. It went and of course it didn't slow down, it really went at a terrific speed to get us back to civilization.
When you arrived at Gorak, was there any sort of reception committee there for you, or media?
The media were there because I've got pictures of us on HMS Antony when we're on the side waiting to come off, being lifted off by the sailors. So the newspapers were there, definitely. I don't know about any other media, because television wasn't in use in the war, was it? It was done away with. Whether there, I suppose there were film crews there, presumably. Otherwise, yeah, they were. But we, as I say, we didn't stop that long in Gorak. We got taken to Glasgow, and there we went into this hotel as far. And I can remember the first night in this bedroom. I think we slept about four in a bed or something like that. Enormous great beds. We didn't sleep at all. It wasn't comfortable. It wasn't hard, was it? We really didn't sleep the first night. No. None of us. We just couldn't get comfy. Not used to being rocked about and that sort of thing, I suppose. But it really was nice there. They did everything they could for us. We even met the Provost of Glasgow and such things like that. Yes. I suppose that they classed us as heroes. I think we were survivors, not heroes, but never mind.
Were you kitted out again?
Yes, in Scottish clothing. Yes, we all got our kilts. We could choose whatever clan we wanted in far as the kilt was concerned, yes.
What did you have, Ken?
Hunt and Gordon I had. Darkish green, was a yellowishy stripe, and it was very nice. My sister commandeered it, of course, which was fair enough. It was wartime. I mean, I wasn't likely to wear it once I got back to London, was I?
Well, you made a great fuss off there by the...
Oh, yes, definitely. Both up there and when I got back home. All the neighbours collected. They had a collection for me, and they bought me a most marvellous watch, all inscribed, which naturally will go on to my children and to their children in due course. Yes, we were made very welcome wherever we went.
How about your parents? Had they given up hope? Because would you have been the last boat?
We were the, I've got in amongst my record where I'm dead. Lost at sea, you know. Or missing, presumed, killed by enemy action, I think it says in the actual... I think it was the News of the World that it's in. Yes, everybody had. The chap who was running the Corb refugee thing, he'd gone round to all the parents and said that there was no more hope. You know, he must have been a rotten job for him. And... he'd gone round all the parents about that, and I think this was about 5 days afterwards, and he said, no, there's no chance anymore now. Yeah.
That must have been quite a reunion with your parents.
Oh, yeah, well, Dad, like all parents in those days was working, and it was in the having to do war work as well as his ordinary work. He couldn't come up, so mother came up and got me and brought me back to Wembley.
This millionaire, the Polish millionaire, did you say he was met by General Sikorski
and his aide-de-camp? Yes.
Did you see that yourself?
Yes. He was met as soon as the boat landed at Gorok. He was met by these two very smart Polish officers. I mean, we didn't know at the time that it was General Sikorski, of course. And he, after we'd been taken up to the hotel in Glasgow, he came and brought these two officers with him. We obtained their autographs in our little autographs book, and one was General Sikorski, and I can't remember the name of his aide-de-camp, Count somebody, and we were quite surprised, actually, because we knew that he was a Polish man, but we didn't realise that he knew all these high-ups in the Polish army. And at the before he went back, I suppose, with General Sikorski, he ensured that we were no worse off for our travels, and gave us all our pocket money that we would have lost on the boat. Yeah.
On the boat, was he kind and caring?
Yes, he was. He was. He made sure that when these little bits of food came up from, because it all had to come past everybody to get to us right at the front, he made sure that nobody stole it on the way up from his part that he could see. It was brought so far, I think, usually by Johnny Mayhew or one of the other officers. So far, then he would collect it and pass it, bring it up to us, so that it wasn't lost by or stolen or such forth, because everybody was in the same boat. We were all starving hungry, let's be honest. Yes.
Were there ever any rows in the boat? Tensions?
Well, I think there were a certain amount of tension occasionally with the Indian. I know that one of them did go and drink seawater. But he still survived up until we got onto the Antony, and then I think he went mad from there, but I'm not sure. I know that we did lose one member of the whole of the boatload, and it was an Indian, and I presume that it was this one. I mean, I wouldn't know. We would not have been told anyway. We just knew that there was one of us had died, because they held a memorial service for him.
So out of that whole boatload, you all survived?
All survived. As far as we know, which is pretty good going. Yeah.
Yes, it sort of indicates very good leadership.
Oh, terrific leadership. And of course, the fact that we weren't going to give in, were we? We were going to get home one way or another. This was the attitude, I think.
Yes, the morale of
you. Oh, it was terrific, yes. Yeah. Even though each day was the same, wet and windy, in a way. But, the morale didn't go down all the way through, right to the very end.
You were saying you did a lot of singing.
Oh, we had sing songs and things like that, and of course, we also had, they weren't lessons, but the storytelling to keep us going, yes, yeah. And of course, it not only kept us going, it kept the others going. If we were singing, they were singing, yeah.
And Mary, could you tell me something about Mary, who sounds such an exceptional lady?
Well, she was, wasn't she? I think without her, none of us would have survived, to be perfectly honest. She was everywhere and doing everything that she could to keep the children occupied and as healthy as possible, considering the circumstances, yes.
Did you have any idea, of her state of health at the end?
No, we didn't really know. I mean, I did sometime after when we were home in our own places. I mean, we used to write to each other, so she couldn't have been too bad. But I don't think she ever took on any more escort work. I think after that, and after all, it was more than enough. And she got decorated by King George VI. I think she got the MBE, I'm not really sure. But I think then she reverted back to her old role as a music teacher. Until such time as she died, which was quite young, actually. So whether this had some effect on it, I mean, it could have done quite easily.
How important do you reckon she was to your survival?
Without her, I don't think that any of us would have survived. Not really. I mean, she made sure that we were as comfortable as can be expected, as warm as possible. She kept rubbing our limbs to make sure that they didn't just sort of go stiff and paralysed, shall we say. She made sure that we were perfectly all right as far as she could, all the time through, both for food and what conditions, that bad as they were, she tried to mitigate them at all times. Yeah.